the optimal life.
Yeah, we were just saying that six or seven podcasts is kind of the number that most podcasts hit, and then they go away. And you started saying, isn't that everything in life?
That's it. That is. It's so easy for us. We get excited about something. We believe in something. We jump in. We try it for a short while. And if we don't see the metrics of success that other people are getting, then we immediately think, well, I don't have anything to offer. I'm not good at this. This isn't going to work. And I'm thinking, do you know how many hours that the other person put in to get to where they are? So when you told me that this is whatever, 387 or 88 podcasts in for you, I'm thinking, good for you, man, because everybody gives up before they see the breakthrough that they're looking for.
Right. And then, of course, there's several things there. One is the comparison thing. And everyone else to you looks like an overnight sensation. Oh, he's an overnight success 20 years later. So there's that. There's the comparison thing. And then there's also the what is your real reason? What is your why for getting involved in the first place?
That's right.
Because if your why is something to that that's not pure and authentic, if your why is truly just because I want to make a lot of money or I want to elevate my profile or blah, 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 I think you're going to fall flat 99% of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard somebody say one time, if your why isn't strong enough, you'll give up on the what.
Mm. Yes. And that's really what it comes down to. I think 99% of people that start podcasts, their why is not strong enough.
That's true.
I'm doing this because I saw a famous person. I saw Joe Rogan, and he's getting 200 million from Spotify. And I want to be like that. I can do this. I can talk to people. Right. Like, that's your why. It's not going to work.
Yeah. It's the whole viral thing, right? We all want to go viral. We all think we're going to go viral. And it's like, even the people who go viral, either A, it's totally accidental, or B, you know, there are usually years of them doing what they were doing before something ever really caught fire, before they got good at something, right? Like one of my favorite quotes, I think his name is G.K. Chesterton, says, anything worth doing is worth doing poorly until you get better. Like, you're going to suck at stuff when you first start out. And that's just part of the developmental journey. But it's because we suck and we're not getting the results we want that we give up. And it's like, dude, that breakthrough to the next level of performance is right around the corner. But if we don't stick to it, and I'll tell you what, I tell people all the time, people are like, oh my gosh, your coaching business has become really successful. You're working on all these high profile clients. It's amazing. Like, how did you do it? And I was like, let me tell you the secret to, for me, one of my secrets to success. I would work a full-time job, which I have in the past, so that I would have the privilege and the pleasure of doing what I do as a coach, because I believe in it to my absolute core. And I think when people lose sight of their why, which is what I just kind of described, my, you know, where I get my why from, when people lose sight of the why, then their motivation, their inspiration, their sense of passion and purpose, when it goes lacking, then who wants to get in the gym? Who wants to do another podcast? Who wants to do more research? Who wants to write another book? You know, who wants to go to another marriage counseling session? No, it's like, forget it. You know, I'm out.
When you're dealing with ladies and gentlemen in the business world, then, and you recognize, hey, this person, they might have potential. They might have potential to be a leader, but they're falling short and they don't seem that engaged. I assume you start questioning their why. If that is the case, how do you kind of help them either get to breakthrough or maybe even say, hey, you know, maybe this isn't right for you?
That's a great question. I think that's part of why Simon Sinek's book, Start With The Why, went so viral, is because I think most of us, you know, have kind of settled into the a kind of the drudgery of life as we know it. We've lost connection, if we ever had a real deep connection to our why, right? Because we kind of lean on our why when we were in high school. I want to be a professional athlete. I want to be a ballerina. I want to be the next Steve Jobs. And then, you know, after a couple of years and you're not nowhere close to any of that, and you lose connection, or maybe your why needs to evolve and mature. But when people lose connection, we just kind of settle for the life we have, for the bills we have, for the mortgage, whatever the case is. And I think people lose hope that the future can be different. And so when I'm working with leaders, by the way, I think everybody's a leader because we all have influence in some area of our life over other people, even if it's just with your pets. We're all leaders. But I think when we are disconnected from that, why it's a big problem. So yes, part of what I or our team does in our coaching process is help leaders wrestle with deeply and articulate your why. I don't care what your job is, what part of the world you live in, your socioeconomic, you know, certain situation is today. Every single human being, I believe, needs to discover. And it's not maybe your why for the rest of your life, but there is this sense of, I have purpose in life, whether I'm just, you know, putting a part onto a car in Detroit and that's all I do all day long on an assembly line. There's got to be a sense of purpose in why I exist, why I go to work, why I engage with other people that if we don't have access to, then I think what happens is we lose a sense of our internal integrity. We start to lean into the circumstances of life and they determine our sense of fulfillment rather than that sense of fulfillment coming from inside of ourselves.
How do you know, at what point do you know when, hey, we've given it our all with this person and they're just not cut for it? Is there a common cue across the board or does it vary per person, per situation?
Yeah. I mean, you know, in our coaching process, we've developed a toolkit that we refer to as our leadership operating system. And this operating system basically equips any one of us with what I think are the fundamental core skills that we need to be able to not only lead ourselves well, but to lead other people well. And this translates into business, parenting, whatever. One of those tools is called our radical minimum standard diagram. So when I work with lots of leaders who are kind of at the end of their rope with an individual in their company on their team, and they're figuring out how much longer do we go? When do we cut loose? How do we know? And so we walk them through a process and exercise that says, first of all, let's identify what's the radical minimum standard. Have you as a leader clarified for that individual from a character perspective, from a competency perspective, and from a capacity perspective? Have you clarified for that person in whatever area they're responsible for, what the radical minimum standard is? And then once you've done that, you can hold that person accountable and help them identify when they're falling below that line or where they're operating above. If they're falling below the line, they're becoming a liability. If they're operating above, they're an asset. If we hold them accountable, in other words, we provide the appropriate amount of support and challenge to give them a chance to rise above that line, then we say, if they persist below the radical minimum standard, then we have to, as leaders, determine a kind of a time horizon where we say, I'm going to give this person another 3 weeks, 3 months, 6 months, whatever it is, to raise above that radical minimum standard, at which point, if they cannot, I then as a leader have to make the hard decision either to relocate them within the organization or to believe that there is either a better fit for them elsewhere, or it's also sometimes okay as leaders to accept maybe we are not able to help them in this season get breakthroughs they're looking for. Does that make sense?
Makes a ton of sense. I would also believe that when you go into these companies to help them and you're working with the leadership to create that radical minimum standard, that's probably something that a lot of these companies are lacking anyways. They're frustrated with their, you're shaking your head. They're frustrated with their lower level or mid-level management, yet they're not articulating what the expectations are. Is that a common issue across the board?
Oh gosh. Well, let me draw a parallel for you.
Yeah.
I think parenting is one of the best parallels that we have for leadership in the workplace. Different, but similar principles. One of my favorite things to say to parents, when they're dealing with teenagers, because most parents want to bitch and complain about their teenagers. And I say to them, usually the biggest problem with teenagers is not the teenager. It's the parents of teenagers. Mm. It's because the parents are not themselves willing to go on a developmental learning journey to become the kind of parents for their teenagers that may have worked back when they were 5 or 6 years old, but it's not going to work for a teenager. And the same thing in any company. As leaders, if we're not willing to grow and develop our leadership ability, are we investing appropriately in these individuals? Are we giving them the appropriate chances to raise their game? Have we set the radical minimum standard? Are we holding them accountable in a way that's helpful rather than harmful? Like, as leaders, I tell leaders, our first order of business when somebody is not performing is not to say they suck, they're not good, we need to get rid of them, but to first and foremost take a hard look at ourselves as leaders and ask the question, where is my responsibility in this equation? Where can I grow and develop to give this person a better chance to succeed in this space? Now, it doesn't always work. Just like parenting, you can be the most amazing parent, and if your teenager runs off the rails and goes, you know, off the deep end, sometimes we can't control that. But like parents, I say to parents, your teenager is difficult. Sure, they're teenagers. What do you want from them? However, are you willing to go on a journey of becoming the kind of parent that can give that teenager the best chance of stepping into their adult life?
Absolutely. That's a great analogy. Perfect example. Making sure that you have well-articulated expectations has to be first and foremost. You're throwing someone into the fire and saying, do it, be better. And you guys come in and say, whoa, 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 where's the radical minimum standard? Have you articulated what the bare bone requirements are? And these bare bone are not like basement. You're saying radical minimum. I assume that that means, hey, this is still high level performance.
That's right. That's right. If you see our radical minimums standard diagram, it's basically, you know, two axes, right? On the vertical axis, you have the measure of character, competency, and capacity. And then on the horizontal, you have the timeline, the time horizon. And what I say to leaders all the time, I said, first of all, that axis, the Z axis, the radical minimum standard, is always increasing, because we should expect, I tell people on my team, what got you in this door is not going to keep you here. You have to continue growing, developing, becoming a better version of yourself, developing your skill set, right? And we expect that of the people in our company. But I also say to leaders, I ask this hard question. Do yourself a favor, have the integrity not to let that person go until you're committed or convinced that you've done everything you know how to do to help them succeed. Because it's just too easy for us as leaders to blame people down chain. They suck. They're no good. They have crappy character. I'm like, yeah, well, welcome to working with human beings. That's all of us. Don't forget, the board is talking to me about your issues, Mr. CEO or president. You've got your own stuff that you've got to work through in character, competency, and capacity. And so because we're all on that journey, we've got to learn how to create healthy space to say, we're going to give people the best chance to grow, develop. It may not work out, but we as leaders are on the hook for, have we done everything we know how in this season to give them the best chance to succeed in our company or our team?
Beautiful. Well, okay. So on the flip side, when you guys walk into a consultancy opportunity and you do start working with a team, there's got to be times where you're meeting with guys and you're saying, okay, this guy's got it. This guy's okay. You know, not sure. But the ones that really stick out to you right away, Eric, what are some of the traits and characteristics that they portray where you're like, I know that he or she is already a great leader and has potential to be maybe even better?
Yeah. Okay. Because I've talked about this so long, I hope this response doesn't sound too packaged, but two things we look for, and this is part of our operating system, our toolkit, that we challenge every leader to grow and develop in these skills. The first ones are honesty, humility, self-love. And those have to do with self-awareness. Our ability to lead ourselves, to have an honest, sober assessment of what's happening in here, our attitudes, our behaviors, and how we're impacting our environment. When somebody displays that they have some sense of self-awareness and it seems genuine, authentic, sober, I go, that's a person I'm willing to gamble on. That's a person that, even though they may not be achieving what you want today, I think has the ability to achieve great things down the road. The other side of that is, I would say, we're looking for people who are humble, hungry, honest, and hardworking. We're looking for people who are willing to do the hard work to become a better version of themselves. I mean, if we hire people expecting they are who they're going to be and they should be able to accomplish everything we're ever going to ask of them today, that's a mistake. We want to hire people who are themselves committed to growing, developing. They have a growth mindset. They want to become a better version. They want to contribute more and more over their time in a team or a company. Those are the qualities we're looking for. And by the way, same qualities that when I'm working with boards who are looking to hire a CEO, president of a company, as I say, if these qualities are not present in those individuals, you are setting yourself up for disaster. Because when this shit hits the fan and they flop or fail in some way, shape, or form, which, by the way, is an inevitability, if they do not have the character qualities to own those mistakes or failures or errors, learn from them, and become a better version of themselves, then basically you can never ask of that person anything more than what they can do today. And that's not a leader that you want to put in any position, quite frankly.
So when you're looking at somebody and you give an example, what are some, or maybe several examples, when you say, yes, this person is portraying honesty, humbleness, self-awareness, what, how do you know if that person's portraying that self-awareness?
That's a great question. So a few things I'm looking for. Number one, can they own failures? Can they give you examples of where they've dropped the ball, struggled, sent a bad email?
You there?
Like, oh, yeah.
There you are. Okay, you froze for a second, but go ahead. Sent a bad email. Okay.
Yeah, if they can't off the top of their head give me examples of where they've screwed up, where they've dropped the ball, where they've failed, where they've struggled, where they've not met a standard, that's concerning to me. If they have to think back 10 years ago to the last time they remembered that they screwed up, that's a huge red light for me. The second thing is I want to ask the people around them, when you talk to them, when there's conflict, disagreement, a difference in opinion, how do you experience them? Do they kind of like a bull in a china shop just try to run roughshod over you? Are they open to what you're saying? Are they curious? Are they interested in other perspectives? Do they scream, yell, curse at people? Do they mishandle people and their pressure? Those are other things that we're looking out for as red flags or red lights that tell us, hey, these are concerns for us. And the opposite is also true. The people who demonstrate honesty, humility toward themselves, self-love, which I define as the willingness to give ourselves permission to fail forward, to grow, to develop, to become a better version of us. Those are important characteristics that I do believe people can develop, because that's what our coaching business is about. But those are also the indicators that we're looking for to determine, is this person suited for this level of responsibility? Are they going to be able to carry a team of any significance on their back when things get rough, right? We all, like, one of my favorite movies, Saving Private Ryan, Tom Hanks plays, he's the leader of this platoon. And man, they land on the beaches of Normandy. It's like hellfire out there. And then they have to go on this mission. We love those people who under immense pressure don't crack, who don't make themselves a liability, who don't sacrifice their team for their own benefit, who don't throw other people under the bus. We love the qualities of those people who have the character to stand up and say, I'm fucking terrified. I don't know what to do, but we're going to figure this out together. And I refuse to sacrifice you and your benefit on the altar of my ego because I need to be right or I need to have my way.
Well, how much better are the teams that you work with where the leader or leaders do take the extreme ownership, do take the accountability?
Oh, I love that Jocko Wilco reference. So good.
Yes. Right. I mean, those are the teams that have to be, those are the type of teams where the people will follow to the beat of the leader's drum.
That's right. That's right. And because I tell people, I said, the best leader in the room is not the person who has all the answers, who knows all the answers to the test. The best leader in the room is the one who's willing to what I call leverage the collective genius of the people in that space to say, this is our problem. This is our success. What can we learn from our success? What can we learn from our problem? How are we going to move forward more effectively? But that leader's mindset is not only are they practicing extreme ownership of themselves, but they're also practicing extreme ownership of their responsibility to empower the people around them. And too often we get caught up in our role, our response. I'm the VP of sales. And if I don't meet my quota and I don't hit these numbers, then how is that going to reflect on me? And that oftentimes robs us of the mental energy or margin to ask the question, how am I empowering my people? How am I helping them become the best version of themselves? So here's a little statistic. I would say, and this is anecdotal, I've not done like the technical research, but I would say most companies that we start working with, when you think of delivery versus development, delivery is, these are the quotas, metrics, measurements that we're going to use to determine quarter after quarter, year after year, whether we're winning or not. And then there's development, which is the idea of like, how are we developing the people who, by the way, are the engine of every business, the people, How are we developing these people and helping them to become better versions of themselves? Because that's what's ultimately going to help the business grow. And I would say most companies we start with, there's probably, and this is being conservative and generous, probably a 90-10 split. 90% of time, energy, and resource is invested in delivery issues, maybe 10% if we're lucky on development. That, and so all we do is say, can we begin? We're not looking for 50-50. We're just looking to begin to just bring a little bit greater balance to that. Because once people realize my people in my team, in my organization, they are the engine of this business or this organization. And so my willingness to invest in that engine is actually what's going to give me the success I'm looking for, not if I simply accomplish my own metrics, my goals, my quotas, my measurements.
What's the difference between a leader and a manager?
I talk about this all the time because in one of our tools that we call the EQ matrix, right? How do we practice emotional intelligence? In other words, how do we be the kind of leaders that other people want to follow? Remind me of the question again. Oh, leaders and managers. I intentionally took from Daniel Goleman, who wrote a book on emotional intelligence. He's kind of the grandfather of that phrase. And he talks about, you know, self-awareness and self-management. I changed it to self-awareness and self-leadership. Not because I don't think his book is brilliant. I stand on the shoulders of that gentleman. But I chose leadership because I think management tends to lean towards status quo. How do we keep things the way they are? How do we prevent something from breaking down? Right? We maintain our cars so that they continue to run at a decent pace. We maintain our bodies through diet and exercise. But I think leadership leans toward a more proactive approach. How do we get to where we want to be? There's a vision of the future. There's a picture of what we want to achieve. And I think leadership, just from a linguistic perspective, leadership, I think, carries the weight of personal responsibility and proactivity in a way that management does not. So I prefer the word leadership.
Yes. And you could be a very good manager, but a poor leader.
Mm-hmm.
You could be great when it comes to organization and meeting right. The metrics and KPIs and making sure everyone's doing what they need to be doing, making sure the project finishes properly and to the right quality.
I love that.
But to your point, going to take the hill for somebody, that leadership skill is a whole different beast.
Yeah.
How about the folks that you see, though, that don't have the social awareness, the self-awareness, the emotional intelligence? There's a lot of smart people out there that don't really understand how they're being perceived. It's hard for them to put themselves in somebody else's shoes. How am I portraying myself? What do others think of me? I'm a little awkward. Maybe I, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So how about those guys, Eric? That has to be, I mean, there has to be, I know you say all people can be developed, but there must still be some certain people that you're just like, it's just not cut for, it's not for them.
I would say this. I believe all people can develop these skills. I don't believe all people are willing to. And by willing, maybe not in this season, maybe a later season, maybe they have a wake-up call of some nature that kind of gives them the courage to embark on a new journey of developing new skills and new abilities. But here's what I'd say. Most of the leaders I work with at some level are resistant to this kind of transformational journey. And so what we do in the beginning of our process is we indirectly through a lot of methodologies, we are testing people's self-awareness. We're testing their willingness to own their shit. Right. And so some of that comes through the some different ways. Number one, how do they pursue feedback, positive and challenging feedback? How do they respond to that feedback when it's offered, even when it's not solicited, but when it's just offered by a boss, a coworker, a customer, client? How do they respond to feedback? Their willingness to do the hard work of saying, gosh, you know what? Some stuff is being revealed, like reflected back to me, that is not flattering. What's their willingness to really do the hard work of digging down inside of themselves. And I'm not talking about deep therapeutic work. There's a place for that. I'm just talking about just owning the fact that when you're under pressure and you're stressed, you can be an asshole. You talk to people inappropriately or disrespectfully. Hey, the way you handled that decision-making process, man, you did not give anybody else a voice in that process. Like these simple experiences, we get to learn from them and say, okay, what am I learning about myself? Are you willing to learn these things about yourself? Or do you go into your coping mechanisms of self-protection, deflection, you know, projection? It's everybody else's fault.
Beside my own. Right?
That's right. Yeah. And so we give people a chance to demonstrate to us, are you willing to do this? And if they are willing, and again, it's not a one-shot deal. We give them multiple opportunities over a period of time. And the ones that are willing to do that hard work, man, we want to keep working with them. The other ones that are unwilling, there comes a point where I have to sit down with that client and say, hey, listen, it doesn't really matter how much money you're paying me. I mean, let's be honest, that would be false. At some level, maybe there is enough money, but my time is valuable and I want a return on my investment in you as a leader. And if you're not going to do this work, as hard as it is, and we can go slow, but if you're not willing to at least move forward in this journey, then the reality is we're wasting our time. You're wasting your money. And either we're not the right fit for you, or this is just a season where you're not ready to do that work. And that's okay. There's no judgment. It's, you know, I've been in seasons where I've been had my head so far up my butt. I was not able to see what people were reflecting back to me. And then I had a big wake-up call. That's the new book I wrote, is literally starts with a massive wake-up call in my marriage. But either way, you know, you can, it's the whole, you can lead a horse to water, you can't make him drink. We can give leaders an opportunity to grow and develop through some of their inadequacies and shortcomings, but we can't make them do it. And so it's their choice.
Absolutely. MPWR Coaching. That's we've linked that in the show notes. That's your consulting company. I do also want to talk about the book, Transform Your Trajectory. But before we get there, you mentioned return on investment. You want a return on investment. I know it varies per program, but how do you guys come in and really measure this? I mean, hey, we're going to be here for X amount of months, or what's your whole process?
Yeah. So when we're pitching this to a leader, team, organization, we always start with the end in mind. What is it that you guys are frustrated by, and what could life look like if it were different? You know, what would you want to see different? Okay, then we have to determine that gap. Is that something we can help you with? And if we think we can, then I'll say, okay, here's what we're going to do. And I explain this very simple analogy. I say, listen, every single person in this room has a operating system, right? It's, you know, our minds are like programmed from when we come into the world and we inherit a bunch of that programming. And then through our high school years and then whatever, our different jobs, we've all been programmed in a variety of ways. And some of that programming gives us really good results, and some of that programming does not. And so we want to celebrate what's working. We want to be honest about what's not working. And then what we do is we invest into leaders a series of tools that is our operating system. And we say, we're going to help you rewrite your own code so that you can operate more effectively under lots of pressure. And what I mean by effectively is more in line with who you really want to be. And what I find, honestly, Nate, is it's the same answer from everybody, right? And difficult situations, what's the ideal way to respond? Everyone gives you the same answer. Okay, great. So we're going to help you rewrite your code as an individual, a team, an organization, so that you guys are operating more in alignment with your core values and what you want to achieve. Fantastic. Along the way, because we're teaching them these simple tools, right, that give them the practical handles, and that's the process of rewriting the code, what we do is we measure by testing, can you use this tool, right? It's no different than if you were learning to become a carpenter. You would get a hammer and a saw and a screwdriver and whatever, and then what would happen? You would learn how to use those tools, and then whoever is apprenticing you, what would they do? They would say, okay, we're going to build a box. We're going to build a birdhouse like you did in shop class when you were a kid, and then they're going to say, okay, let's see how you did that. How did you use the tools? I was watching you. What's the outcome? And so along the way, we're constantly utilizing the tools which provide the metrics to help people understand, am I learning to use the tools and what are the results? And those results are largely anecdotal. So for example, just the other day, I was working with an executive team from a company headquartered out in Los Angeles. And I said, guys, we're going to do a quick review assessment. So we're going to look back over the last 3 months. We've been learning some of this stuff. And I want you guys not to tell me about yourself. I want you to tell me about other people who are in this process. Kind of like an informal 360 review. I want you to tell me where you see other people behaving differently because of what we're learning. And when you start hearing all the stories, this person used to lose their shit in any conflict or in any hot meeting, and they would bark at people and, commandeer the conversation. And now, man, they're showing curiosity. They're asking more questions. They're creating space. They're actually proactively inviting people to give them feedback. Whoa, that's what we're looking for. As I tell people, if you ask one person, have you changed? They'll say, of course I have. The real test is let me ask the people that you're impacting every day. And if
Yes.
they can't see the change, then I'm sorry to tell you, you may have changed cognitively, but you have not changed in your behaviors.
Love that. One other thing on that, I also would imagine that you guys come in, the MPWR guys come in on the first day. This has got to be common across the board. And all the naysayers, everyone's staring at you.
Oh,
Oh,
yeah.
look at this, the board or the CEO. What is this baloney that we're going to have to go through? So talk us through, because that's probably one of the biggest challenges you guys face at the beginning is nobody wants us here.
Yep. And part of that is because they've never experienced it. Some of it's because the experiences they have had with other consulting or coaching groups has not been helpful, has not been transformative, has not moved the needle. And it's a lot of time, energy, and resource that they're having to invest in the process. So what we do is we accept all that. Say, yeah, we have to prove to you that what we do actually moves the needle. So let's do this. We always start with a workshop where we introduce our core framework called the EQ Matrix, which is in our first book called Leadership Gravitas, available on Amazon, blah, blah. And what we do, we just simply introduce the framework and we ask them the question, how much does this, and be honest, how much does this reflect the kind of leader that you think you want to be? And how much of this reflects the kind of culture that you would love to be a part of and experience every single day? And they say, yes. It's always unanimous. Yes, that sounds amazing. Awesome. Now, here's what we're going to do. On a scale of 1 to 10, where would you assess yourself in terms of these different core skills? And then how would you assess the culture in terms of those core skills and that experience? And all of a sudden, when they have to articulate the contrast, and we give them a chance to share, don't say names, but just let us know what's your experience. And they go, oh man, we're really struggling here, 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 here. Okay. If we could move the needle in these areas, and it could ch literally change the way you guys operate individually and collectively, what difference do you think that would make in the way you operate as teams, as an organization, with your customers, clients, on and on? And then everything is them telling us. They tell us the story of what they think is possible. And then we say, great, we believe that. And we would love to help you, but it's your choice. You have to do the hard work. We can partner you, but like anything else, Tiger Woods ultimately has to make his own golf swing. Or, a race car driver ultimately has to get in the cockpit of that car and drive their own car. I've been watching, Formula One driver on Netflix. They ultimately have to do it, but they all have coaches. I work in the NBA, the Atlanta Hawks, right? And at the end of the day, these guys got to get on the court and shoot the shot. But they all have coaches who come alongside of them to say, you're here. Is this the end of the road for you? Is this ultimately fulfilling, satisfying? Have you reached your ultimate goals? No. What is that? Where could you be? Here. Okay. So what we would love to do is help you bridge that gap. You're going to have to do the hard work. You have to show up to practice, which is our coaching calls. You're going to have to get out of your comfort zone. You're going to have to experience the disorientating, realities of transformation. You're going to have to let go of some old things. You're going to have to engage and embrace the process of rewriting your own code. But if you did that, and it could get you to this beautiful picture that you've just painted for us, would that be worth the time and energy and money you would spend on it? Because if it's not, don't do it. But if you believe that's possible, and we have a crap load of stories from other companies and leaders and teams we've worked with that suggest it is, Would you be willing to try it for 3 months? Just 3 months. And if this sucks, get rid of us. If it doesn't work for you, get rid of us. If you're too busy, get rid of us. But we're asking for a 3 month commitment. They've got to ante it for 3 months. And I can tell you right now, Nate, at the end of 3 months, I say, okay, guys, 3 month review. What do you guys think? Is this hogwash? Is it BS? Is it just another stupid fly by the way fad? You know, if this isn't moving the needle, and unanimously the response is always, where has this been? Oh my gosh, we've heard lots of good ideas, but nobody has helped us bridge the gap between good ideas and boots on the ground practice that actually moves the needle in how we operate together. And once they experience that, man, it's like they drink the Kool-Aid. They're
hooked. That synergy is unbreakable at that point.
It is.
Leadership.
You want to know what works.
Yeah, Leadership Gravitas. You teased that. That was Eric's first book from several years ago. We've linked that in the show notes as well for anyone that wants to learn more. But your latest book, Transform Your Trajectory, How to Turn Your Most Challenging Moments into Life-Changing Breakthroughs. You teased us. There's the book on the screen. You teased us. Something happened in your marriage. Take us through it. What caused the whole trajectory?
Yeah, so let me read you the opening line of the book. And I promise you to read this even today with how much progress my wife and I have made through lots of marriage counseling. It's still painful. This is the opening words of my book. Eric, I want a separation. And my wife and I had committed early on in our marriage. We do not throw the divorce word around or separate like as ammunition, you know, or to get one up each other. And that was one of those what I call wake up calls, where I had gone so far down a particular road in my own coping with stress and anxiety. You know, I coach people in this, but I'm a human being and I fucked up, man. I got so far into coping through alcohol that I was jeopardizing my marriage, my relationship with my kids, even other friends. And it wasn't like I was a drunk just running around getting blasted every day. It was just the slow, subtle medicating against stress, anxiety, insecurity, fear, that over time started to have an impact on my attitudes and my behaviors and how I was impacting other people in my life. And so that was a massive wake-up call. And what the book is about is introducing one of our core tools that gives us a simple way of identifying, yeah, sometimes we're going to have to hit a brick wall before we wake up to stuff. But more often than not, when we look back, we go, man, there were so many signposts along the way, these, you know, saying, hey, there's a dead end. Hey, there's a cliff at the end of this road. Hey, there's some harm that's going to be, you know, befall you if you stay on this path. But we're so like, you know, ambitious and driven, and we're going to, you know, change the world and do great things that we often miss those signposts. So the book is about being able to recognize not just the wake up moments, but also the signposts, and to ask the question, what if I committed my life to slowing down just enough to pay attention to those signposts in my life? And what if I had a simple mechanism to not just identify them, but to process them in a way that allows me to excavate learning, growth, transformation, wisdom that literally would transform the trajectory of my life? And so I think for most people, we have all these experiences in life, but we kind of what I call speed bump over them. Like, you know, like you're in a neighborhood dropping your kids off at school and you're like, these damn speed bumps are making me slow down, or I'm going to bottom out my car. And I think that's what happens in life, is we're so busy trying to get somewhere down the road that we're not paying attention to the experiences of our everyday lives that are trying to get our attention and say, hey, dude, you need to pay attention to your marriage, your parenting, your physical health, your finances. You need to pay attention to your relationship with your coworkers or your boss or this customer or client, or you need to pay attention to this dynamic of political conversations with your friends on the golf course, because the way that you're impacting your environment, the way you're impacting yourself, is taking you down a path that is going to lead to some serious consequences, right? And so the book is about how do we get ahead of that, and how do we learn to identify them and learn to seize every experience in life as an opportunity for personal growth and transformation.
Oh, it's awesome stuff. It's awesome stuff because you took the steps needed, apparently, to turn things around. When you were standing there and you heard those words, Eric, I want a separation, where were you?
Oh, dude, I was in a bad place. But I mean, the book lays it out. I'm very honest. I wrote the book. They're my words.
Was this at home? Was this over dinner? Where was the...
Yeah, it was actually, I was house sitting for my in-laws. We were at the point where any excuse I had to be out of the house, I would take it, because I was, again, just distancing myself from anything that created more stress and anxiety. not knowing how to tackle these things head on, just ill-equipped, underskilled. We've been married 23 years, so we learned a lot of stuff, but that whole adage, what got you here won't get you there, like we were there, like where I'm like, what? We've learned so much. Why do I have to learn more? So she says what she says, and of course I go into the whole blame her, project onto my life circumstances, anything but take responsibility for the fact that like I have a significant part that I've played in where our marriage is at this moment. And eventually, because I have over my years learned the value of surrounding myself with people to give me feedback. I call it game tape. Like I need people to help me see how I'm operating, how I'm impacting my environment. And that was the wake-up call. And I say in the book, like we don't often change until the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change, because change is hard. And that was it for me. And I'm not, I, and I'm, I coach people. I say, dude, pay attention to the signpost, man. You're headed down a bad path. But it doesn't mean that in our own personal lives that we're immune to these realities. And so that began a long process. My wife and I had mentioned earlier have been in intensive marriage therapy counseling. This guy is our coach. He's coaching us to recognize, hey, you guys have this amazing history together, and there's a lot of also pain involved. Do you see a better marriage? Do you see a better relationship? Do you see greater opportunity for intimacy? If you don't see that future, I can't help you. But if you do see it and you can identify the gap and you're willing to let me partner with you guys to bridge that gap, then I'm willing to help you. And so we've been in that and we've been making slow progress. I wish I had the fairy tale ending, everything's perfect, we're fantastic, we have a better marriage now. No, we're in the thick of it still. But that's also, Nate, what I kind of have committed myself to as a leader, is that I just cannot pretend that I figured it all out, I've sorted it all out, I have all the answers. I just want to be able to be on my journey and share with other people what I've learned that will potentially help them on their journey.
Yeah, well, it circles back to the leaders, the mid-level guys that you're trying to work with. Hey, do you want to improve? Can you see yourself getting there? If you want to keep, what's your why? Back to where we started. What's your why? Hey man, fantastic stuff. We've linked the website, your website, MPWR. We've linked the books, and awesome connecting with you. Wishing you continued success.
Thank you, Nate. I appreciate being on your podcast, bud.